Welcome to The Real Fake News on KPCRadio.com,
yeah.
A critically sarcastic analysis of news. In this show, we will differentiate the real news from the fake, with help from comedians, college professors, advocates, and experts. Today, we will discuss neighborhood councils, legal cannabis social equity, Biden's gropey hands, and more. I'm your host, Jesse Bertel. Joining me here today, we have L.A. comedian Mark Hurtado.
Hey.
How's it going?
Hey, it's going good.
And Van Nuys neighborhood council member Jason Ackerman. How you doing?
Great. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here, guys. Our discussion today will be formatted as a game of real news, fake news, where I present real news stories or fake news stories and ask you questions about it. Sound good?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
All right. Let's play the game. In real news, the LA Times reported that neighborhood councils are being shaped by corporations like Starbucks, with reports of people being bussed into council meetings from across town like background actors. Does this poison the integrity of the democratic process? Now, you're a neighborhood council member, and you probably know about this. What can you tell us about this?
Okay, so this is more old news than anything else. This is back from 2012. Now we have much stronger language limiting who is eligible to become a stakeholder to vote in a neighbor council election. But most neighbor councils have language like stakeholders are individuals who live, work, own property, or have an ongoing commitment to the community. So you're part of a volunteer organization, or you're a member of a faith-based community or something like that. That's really what this was that's kind of like what most neighborhood councils have. We used to have this thing where if you just prove that you have some kind of like very loose commitment, like, you know, you go to a Starbucks in Encino, for example, that you should be eligible to vote in the Encino neighborhood council. So that was like, you know, that didn't happen there, but that happened in other neighborhood councils. I personally think that this is an overreaction.
Fake news, huh?
It's fake news, yeah. because there was an open mic in Encino I used to like going to called the Soapbox Sessions, and they met every week on Thursday nights outside the Coffee Bean Tea Leaf at Woodley and Ventura. And I thought that those people should be able to vote in the neighborhood council elections, but because it wasn't a nonprofit and it wasn't a faith organization, without that looser interpretation of what's a stakeholder, those people were no longer eligible to vote in the election.
So they just removed general experience. It didn't. Yeah. It has to be a specific type.
It has to be a structured kind of, you know, experiential or, you know, kind of thing. Like you're part of the Los Encinos Docents Association or something like that. Interestingly enough, we had an Armenian church that did bus in a lot of people, and they were all registered through the Armenian church. Not everyone lived there, but they all belonged to that church.
Yeah. Isn't it possible, though, you can just go to these church meetings every week, but you don't live in the neighborhood and you don't really experience the neighborhood at all, so you kind of actually don't know what you're talking about? You just go to one building, maybe McDonald's or something?
Yeah, I mean, that's where the term Starbucks stakeholder came from. Like, someone just goes to Starbucks once in a while in whatever community, and that's their tie to the community.
Yeah.
I would argue if you belong to a church and you go to church, you know, on a regular basis or synagogue, that you probably do have a little more engagement level with the community than just someone who just goes to Starbucks once in a while. Because, you know, once church gets out or before, you're going to go to local businesses maybe, and maybe you'll go to like lunch or dinner afterwards or breakfast depending on where you're going. So it is possible to have kind of organization would be more like concrete connection. But I think that at the same time that there needs to be space for people who are part of less structured organizations like open mics to be able to have a voice in neighborhood councils, especially when neighborhood councils can determine things like land use and how late you want venues to be open till.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. It's very interesting.
I feel like if you just drive through it every day for work, you should get a vote because those potholes affect you too, you know?
Yeah.
Like that traffic affects you too, right?
Well, if you hit a pothole, you can use the My311 app and report that.
Oh, yeah?
And you don't have to live in anywhere particular to report those out.
Is it all road stuff?
My311's also like, you know, trash pickup. Like if you see like someone just dumped a couch and junk on the side of a road, you know, you can call 311 and they'll pick it up.
You say it's called My311?
My LA 311 is the name of the app. You can also call 311 or you can just like look up LA 311, you know, on the web.
I learned something. My 311 sounds like a dating site for some reason. I don't know why.
All right, well, let's go ahead and play again. In fake news, according to Filter Mag, the funding from LA's social equity program provided by Measure M, which was created to ensure people most impacted by the war on drugs would benefit from legal cannabis sales, is being diverted away from the impacted communities and instead given to the LAPD. What's going on here?
That's some real news.
Does the LAPD deserve this money? I mean, they're losing money now that weed is legal, huh?
Well, I mean, to be fair, they're already getting a huge chunk of money from the Measure M and Prop 64 revenues for enforcement of oversight and in, you know, management. So the fact that they took this comparatively small $10 million chunk of change that's supposed to go towards, you know, helping communities of color and working class communities is just outrageous. And this is a discussion going on right now in City Hall.
I mean, yeah, I can't speak too much on it because I don't know a lot about it. But all I know is going to LAPD doesn't, like, rile me as much as, like, if it went to, like, high-level people already with money. You know what I'm saying? Kind of a thing. It's at least going towards something more blue-collar. And I'm not saying that's better. I'm just saying.
But it was promised to repay the social equity that balance that of the, you know, the war on drugs that wasn't affected. Do you think it would be better put there?
Yeah, I do. I just, when it says it went to LAPD, I was like, oh, well, that kind of actually feels like that will kind of come back around. Instinctually, you know, not too happy about it because it sounds like just some political BS.
You disagree, Jason?
I disagree. I think that if we're going to put that money into any city department, it should probably go something more like to Parks and Rec, or to LAUSD for after-school programs, or to cultural affairs, or something like that that actually, you know, can directly, you know, help the communities.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. LAPD helps community, though, right? I'd rather go to all those two over LAPD. But
if you're middle class or up in white, sure, yeah, they help your community absolutely. But if you're working class and a person of color, it's kind of a.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily fair, though. I mean, even in poorer communities, obviously there are bad things that happen, and you know, there's not, you know, it's not a perfect thing, but right. They are providing a service for every community. All right, let's go ahead to another story. Let's play again. In real news, according to CNN, Joe Biden's half apology for groping women and children didn't help his credibility. So what do you guys think about VP Gropey Hands? Is this real news?
No, I mean, Joe Biden for sure does that and is for sure creepy, but it doesn't, you know, until like weird allegations or something comes out, it just seems like he is being a creep. And yeah, for sure he dropped the ball in the apology, like poor choice of how to do it.
I mean, so yeah, it's not illegal to be
with it. Yeah, but it doesn't, you know, I don't get too caught up on.
I don't think it, you know, is good optics in the post Me Too world.
Yeah.
That we need, you know, and also, I mean, Joe Biden is definitely not a friend of the progressive movement. And he's definitely not, and if you're a student, as I suppose if you're listening to college radio, you probably are, Joe Biden's really not your friend because Joe Biden helped several times to keep it so you can't discharge student loan debt if you file for bankruptcy.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Keep your gropey hands off of my financial aid, but, Joe Biden.
Yeah, but that's a better reason to not like Joe Biden, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you know, it is creepy and he should stop doing it for sure. Yeah. I'm surprised he made it this far, just being a hair sniffer. That's not like, I don't know how that gets supported.
Well, before, you know, like last year or the year before when the Me Too movement really broke, this wasn't taken seriously as a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of the way it was. And we now live in a world where we have kind of come to a tacit consensus that no, I mean, that may be the way it was, mm-hmm. but that's not the way it should be mm-hmm. or the way it has, you know, is anymore.
Sure.
And so, you know, we need to hold people accountable for their actions.
Yeah.
You know,
it is all about accountability.
So yes. Is CNN overreacting with this or no?
I mean, CNN overreacts to everything.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, CNN has 24 hours of news cycle to fill.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing their job the way they've interpreted it rather than, you know, diverting some time to, like, actually talking about things that affect people's lives.
Feels like
unless
a reach.
Unless you're fake. But unch.
Yeah.
All right. Let's end on that one and play again. In fake news, John Oliver committed an entire episode to body slamming the WWE CEO Vince McMahon for becoming a, quote, billionaire on the broken backs of his non-employees. Is this time for a complete labor reform overhaul?
Sure. Yeah, it'd only be a good thing. Like, what are the downsides to it? Vince McMahon makes a little less money, you know? I'm kind of close to this just because this is very similar to Comedy World, where there's no unions or anything like that. So you enter this this industry that's very passion forward. It's people love to do this. It fulfills them. It's one of the best things to do in the world, both wrestling and comedy, if you're a fan of either. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of mistreat people or give them the short end of the stick, and they'll keep coming because they just love what they do, even if it's not fair. And you can see that. You can see it, the correlation. The deaths of wrestlers? Mm-hmm. It's like three times the amount of pro NFL players, which is already three times the amount of normal people.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and
when you're worse than the NFL, that's
not random, you know. But removing just the people die for all sorts of reasons and stuff. The access to healthcare and stuff, and how limited it is, if you got an injury and you know 6 weeks later, if you haven't fixed it or if you're not trying to wrestle, you can just be completely cut off, you know?
Right. And yeah. Jason, what do you think about the issue of them not being employees?
Well, I think this is just this is a problem in a broader spectrum of industries, but it's really bad in wrestling because even the WWE concedes without our wrestlers, we're nothing. And without our fans, we're nothing. And that they're tapping, and that wrestlers have to turn to the fans to cover their healthcare expenses for injuries suffered on the job.
Right, like, you know, GoFundMe's.
GoFundMe, yeah. But I mean, this whole independent contractor stuff is, this gigantic loophole that needs to be closed as soon as possible, because it's not just wrestlers; it's things like Lyft drivers and Uber drivers, who don't, reap the full benefit of their work. But with the WWE being as dangerous as it is, it's really like crazy that Vince McMahon is making this much money, and there's not. And whereas with the NFL, and they talked about this in the segment, in every other professional sports league, the players are covered by unions.
Right.
You know, they get them health care and retirement funds.
Independent contractors can't unionize.
Independent contractors can't unionize.
Other benefits to being an actual employee that you can think of?
Overtime pay would be one of them, that you qualify for that. Retirement plans, just the stability of knowing that, you know, you can't be fired for some random reason.
What about comedians? I mean, how how's that ever going to be changed in the comedy world? Because
I've heard that it's been tried a couple. We're a bunch of cats, man. You can't just.
You kind of have to employ. You call around and you try to book a gig. I mean. Well,
you know, there's no real, like, WrestleMania is a franchise, which they absorbed a bunch of smaller franchises, and now that is, like, there's not that in comedy. Comedy, you know, there's a couple of strings of clubs and stuff, and you can get in on those, but even just being in on the improv circuit or something like that, or like, I don't know, Hyena circuit, that's still not enough. You have to go to other clubs,
and even
too.
The there's top no, ones aren't full employees anywhere. Right. They're all you're always going to be a freelance in that kind of gig, or like an actor and...
I mean, absolutely. Kind of working. You can't name a comedian that like people love, even if they're like low key, that also doesn't have TV credits, that also hasn't been in this show or featured in this movie or some really popular podcast or something like that.
Right.
You have to do other stuff too.
I mean,
There's no like wrestle. There's no WWE for comedy.
Jason? I mean, there is a union out there that actually would probably gladly welcome comedians and wrestlers into their ranks at the same time, which is the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, which is a which is opposed to being a trade specific union. It's an industrial union, so it's, you know,
maybe they're just not advertising well enough, because I don't know that a lot of people know about it.
Unfortunately, that's kind of the nature of the beast when you're an anti-capitalist union, is that you don't have a lot of funds for advertising and lobbying.
Gotcha.
But they did absorb the Teamsters for a while, a couple of years ago. And they took the longshoremen, not the Teamsters. Sorry, they took the contract from the Longshoremen's Union and became the representative voice of the longshoremen for a while. But the nice thing about the IWW is that anybody can join. You don't have to be a skilled laborer. You can be an unskilled laborer. And not to say that comedians and wrestlers are unskilled. Obviously, there's great skill required in being a comedian or a wrestler. But and it's not mutually exclusive. Like, if you join the IWW, you don't have to renounce your membership and SEIU or the Writers Guild or the Directors Guild or something like that.
Well, wait, I'm confused. So say I want to join the IWW and I have to pay some sort of fee or something like that. Yeah. How does that come back to me and help me in like comedy or like getting work or paid more or less? Or like, well, what are they, like, what would they, do we have to create a new thing through the IWW?
So there are different branches of the IWW, and basically the idea is that when one branch of the union goes on strike, the whole thing goes on strike, right? So, I mean, obviously the decision to go on strike is taken very seriously. And yes, you can join the IWW for like, you know, $25 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just a broader way to build a broader coalition, which is needed sorely in general in society between working peoples of different trades. When the IWW was particularly strong in the 1910s, they pushed a lot of progressive labor reforms through, including like the 8-hour work week. So it was outlawed for a long time because they were such a threat to the status quo. But they're back. They're now okay to be reestablished.
So are you saying, just to be clear, the IWW could help facilitate,
yes,
unions? They're not the answer.
They are a union. So if you wanted to organize a Lyft driver's local or a comedian's local under the IWW, you could do that. And that's as opposed to like if you tried to do that under some of the other unions, they'd be like, no, you don't qualify to be in our union.
Is there a realm where, because I've seen this a little bit in acting world, where, say, let's just say 1,000 comedians, mm-hmm, get unionized through the IWW, or starting from the ground up, however that process goes, and now I'm a union official, and now I try to get work, and via the union, they make sure that I'm guaranteed blank and blank and blank. Is there an area where clubs can be like, oh, your union, we don't work union workers because of all that stuff, like where you can actually kind of get, basically lose work because of it? Because I've seen similar stuff with SAG where, you know, you can't do a lot of non-union stuff.
Right. Well, that's the reverse. Like, you know, you would normally see something like it'd be a union club,
mm-hmm,
and they would not let you in unless you're a union member. It's very rare. I mean, since there's not a huge comedians union yet.
Sure.
There's really not the need for that rule yet. But, I mean, that's kind of the idea, is that once you get to the point where you have enough infrastructure in place, you can create a closed shop environment. Where you protect the union workers,
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to another story. It's a very interesting topic. Let's play again. In real news, according to Vox, Elizabeth Warren wants CEOs to go to jail when their companies behave badly. So, mm-hmm, what do you guys think? Should CEOs be more accountable to their companies' actions?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
No disagreement there, huh?
No disagreement.
That's kind of the problem, right, of people not facing the consequences. You can take, like, bailouts and stuff like that, where if, say, we reached an area where they did face consequences, there was an example made, instead of, you know, trying to keep the trend going, they'd have to refigure out, hey, we can't do that again. Like, what's a better way to not run into this? We could see some real change via accountability, yeah, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the crazy thing is that the CEOs get compensated for a job well done, whether or not the job was actually well done. You know, I think that the CEO could get fired, but even if they get fired, they still get these tremendous, like, golden parachute packages and sweetheart deals on their way out. So I think that, you know, going back to the banking situation in 2008, we only jailed, one banker when it was like the entire industry was in on the game. And I think we need, that is a clear sign that we need much stricter rules about, company mispractice and organizational mispractice. Yeah.
Let's get some CEOs in jail, huh? Let's get them in there.
Nobody objects to that, huh? Is it just because they're rich and we're not? Or
no, not just because of that, but because sometimes, in some instances, they can actually cause a lot of harm and be doing a lot. Yeah, they can be messing up a lot of things and face no consequences because of it. They can be outside of it.
Elizabeth Warren just politicking here, or do you think she's serious?
I think she's serious. This has kind of been a running thing for her since she first took office, even before she took office, as part of the effort to establish the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I think that's what it's called. But basically her argument is that, if your toaster blows up, we have regulations to help you, you know, and get a settlement for your toaster blowing up in your
probably
face.
Probably thanks to Ralph Nader.
Right. But if your student loan, but if your home loan blows up in your face, you're in deep trouble because there's nothing to protect you. So, I mean, this is one of those things that she's legitimately been passionate about consistently throughout her career. If you followed her at all, you know that she's very much about bringing accountability to Wall Street and big money and getting it out of the political system as much as possible.
Take those CEOs down.
Let's do it.
Take them down.
All right. Let's play again. Fake news. In our final story, according to City Watch, Woodland Hills Warner Center Neighborhood Council wants to reopen the inquiry into a 1959 nuclear meltdown at Santa Susana Field Laboratory, which was never cleaned up, but received no clear answers from the Department of Toxic Substances Control. So do we in our neighborhood have a right to know whether or not there's nuclear waste and whether or not it poses a health risk?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think transparency is always a good thing, right?
I do, too. I mean, the crazy thing is that last year we had the Woolsey Fire, which was one of the biggest fires ever seen in LA County.
Oh, right, yeah.
And this fire started at the Santa Susana Field Laboratory and burned a lot of the grounds. So in addition to this uncleaned, nuclear site, we now have what might be, burned particles of nuclear material in the air around Woodland Hills and Warner Center, which is not good considering they are also recently in the path of the Aliso Canyon blowout. So, I mean, the West San Fernando Valley, really is kind of getting the raw end of the deal on a lot of these things. And we absolutely do need to know what happened with the Santa Susana Field Laboratory and what happened after the Woolsey Fire and before the Woolsey Fire, mm-hmm. so we can assess, is there radioactive stuff in the air and is it, harming the people?
And will I get superpowers?
Well, no, you won't get superpowers.
Well, my question is,
super cancer.
It's
not as good.
I'm on that same team. There's nothing that tests for radioactivity just in general around places with plants. We don't have like tabs on like a yearly radioactive kind of, measurement type of a thing.
I'm sure we do. I mean, but unfortunately, a lot of these things tend to be classified.
Yeah.
So, there are a lot of organizations that are kind of like paying attention to this, a lot of the environmental orgs particularly. But it's kind of hard to get clear data on this because it's, that kind of top secret.
Yeah.
But I just want to say while we're here and talking about Woodland Hills Warner Center Neighborhood Council, this is another reason to get involved in your local neighborhood council because you have the power to affect this kind of change and really stand up for your community and get involved. And our elections are coming up. They're divided by region. And they're going to be happening over the next couple of months. And if you live in on the other side of the hill from the San Fernando Valley, there are much later candidate registration windows, and you might be able to still run for a neighborhood council. So if you're really passionate about making a change in the world in your community, neighbor councils are a great way to do that. I'm gonna warn you, it's not as fun as a protest. There's a lot of meetings and a lot of rules you gotta learn how to deal with. But this is, there's 15 seats on the LA City Council, and you need at least $1 million to win any of them. Basically, neighborhood councils. There's 99 neighborhood councils. There's thousands of seats, and we need more perspectives from progressives, young people, people of color, working class people, women, students, and please get involved. Please help empower LA.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. But before we go, I'd like to give you both a chance to tell our listeners where they can find out more about you. Jason, would you like to start?
I don't have a website, but if you want to learn more about neighborhood councils, please go to empowerla.org.
Okay. And Mark?
I'm doing all sorts of stuff. I'd really, really like to plug my show that I co-produce. It's at the Mid-City Art House. The next one is this Friday. It's called Laughing on the Inside. It's a comedy show that all proceeds go to charity. It's free to go to. We do have a $10 suggested donation. But, if you just want to come and see some great comedians, we have comedians from Late Night, from Comedy Central, from TV, like you name it. They're all going up this Friday. We do it bi-weekly. But it's called Laughing on the Inside. The proceeds are through the FATE Foundation, an organization that helps provide clean water globally, especially in the Philippines. And, I would love to see you there. It'd be this Friday at the Mid-City Art House in Culver City. I guess it's in Mid-City. And starts at 9 o'clock.
Any social medias or?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you just search for either Laughing on the Inside, comedy show for charity on Facebook, or there's links on Eventbrite as well, and a couple of other sites, or just check events at the Mid-City Art House. Yeah, right. We'd love to see you guys. It is 420 friendly. I should feature that. So, you know, if you're not, don't like to be around that, that does kind of happen there because we do have a couple of sponsorships from dispensaries as
Fair warning.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for joining me here today on The Real Fake News. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Next Wednesday, my guests will be comedian and progressive activist Elizabeth Croydon and filmmaker and modern monetary theory proponent Virginia Kotz. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Patreon at Jesse Bertel. Tune in to The Real Fake News every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. on kpcradio.com and the following day on YouTube.